Hello and welcome to another episode of I Could Never Be Here on the Popcorn Talk Network. Guys, I don't know where December suddenly came from. The fact that we're already in the first week of December, it feels like the first week of February maybe. But that means we are into the Christmas season, well into the season of giving. And I hope you guys are taking the time to do just that. I know it's this time of year where I feel like it's important to be able to just pay people back maybe for things that they've done in your life or just strangers, be able to make their season better. So that is my challenge to you guys this week, to be able to do something nice for someone. Maybe give an extra tip, maybe give an extra dollar. Do whatever you can. That is my challenge. Go make it happen. I have a feeling that the fans of Riverdale are going to enjoy this episode. Certainly, you can hear the theme music playing behind me. We have the star of season one. He played Jason Blossom. But before that, he's known for much more. He was also on The Fosters. He was also in the movie The Amityville Terror. Please welcome Trevor Steins. Trevor, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, man. How are you?
I'm doing well. Are you blown away that we're already into December as well?
Yeah, I honestly have no idea where the year went. Like, it's kind of terrifying. I just feel like it slipped by me without my noticing.
It's crazy in LA, too, because we don't have the season. So you don't have, like, Oh, the change of leaves, the snow. You don't have that to remind you.
Yeah, exactly. It disappears without you even noticing. And it's jarring every time. It's like, oh, it's the new year? Oh, I'm so glad I got so much done this year.
Yeah, you're looking back and, you know, some people wish they had been more productive. And Some people were like, oh, okay, I'm finally done. I finally was able to accomplish this.
Yeah, hey.
And you're obviously getting back into the swing of things from being in Poland, too, just about a week ago.
Yeah, I am. I had a great time over in Warsaw for Warsaw Comic Con. I got to meet hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of amazingly passionate fans, and they're just the sweetest people over there. Awesome. I loved it so much.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Well, for those new joining the show, you can follow us every Monday. We're here live on the Popcorn Talk Network with a new episode of I Could Never Be. We're also on iTunes, though, later Monday, later into the week, if you want to be able to just listen to us while you're enjoying maybe your drive, doing whatever you want to do around the house. We're just here to spread some inspiration, some motivation in your week, and just be able to offer some encouragement. If you want to follow Trevor, you can follow him on Twitter, on Instagram, @Trevor_Steins. You can follow me @TheOnlyMC. First time in Poland.
Yeah, first time in Europe. Like, I'd never been overseas before then.
And you said that you were greeted at the airport in a very nice way.
I was, yeah. I got out and it was something I'd never experienced before. There were people waiting, like, outside at the baggage claim with, like, pictures and pens to sign autographs. And I got to meet, like, immediately I was rushed by the people working for the expo, mm-hmm. for Comic-Con, and like a personal security detail that was like arm-barring people trying to talk to me. And I felt so bad. Like,
yeah.
I told them that I was fine taking a couple pictures.
I have 3 minutes. I have time.
Yeah, because like they'd come to the airport to see me, which was insane. Like, I've never experienced anything like that before. So it was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And the candies?
Yeah. I was so many fans brought me like little Polish candies and Oreos too. Like, I don't know if you
regular Oreos. I saw your picture on Twitter.
Yeah. Because it's it's become kind of a thing with my following online that they know that I love Oreos. It's a huge thing for me. I mean, I personally just cannot stop eating them. So I got so many, like, Oreos, just boxes and boxes of Oreos and other Polish candies. I was telling you before we went live about this one girl comes up to me and she tells me that she comes from a small town in Poland that's only known for making one thing, and it's these, like, little caramel candies. And so she brought me a box or a little bag of them.
Wow.
That said, I hope to make your life a little bit sweeter.
And it did?
It did. So good. Like, I can't stop eating. I couldn't stop eating them until they were gone. Like, they're delicious.
Yeah, lasted about a day and a half.
Exactly.
Got to know real quick, what's your favorite flavor of Oreos? They've been doing a lot of new ones. What's your favorite?
Yeah. You know, so I have them ranked in, like, tiers.
Top three.
It's hard for me to get away from the original. Like, okay. I think the original is just such a classic taste.
Like double stuff original or regular original?
I think the flavor can go for both. I know a lot of people are partial to the double stuff, and I can understand why. Yeah, exactly. So I think my top three right now would have to be original / double stuffed. The cinnamon bun flavor.
Ooh, delicious.
Yeah, they're real good. And the chocolate cream, another kind of classic. Yeah. But I'm a chocolate guy, so it's those will always be a favorite.
Awesome, awesome. Yeah. I'm sure you were over there for Riverdale, and that's certainly something. Later in the show, we're going to be doing a bunch of fan questions that people submitted to be able to talk about Riverdale. Is that something that you're still following? You're watching, trying to keep up? I know that you were such a huge part of season one.
Yeah. No, I love getting to watch it as a fan, and just getting to feel like I was a part of this grander story, right? I have fallen a little bit behind in the recent weeks because I've been busy, but
traveling, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm gonna try and catch up soon. So no spoilers, please. I'm trying, like I still need to catch up. But yeah, getting to watch and see my friends perform and do something that they're proud of and that I'm proud of is amazing for me.
Is that what kind of a transition is that? You're saying you're following it as a fan now. Is it a new appreciation?
Yeah, it's different in the sense that, like, before when I would watch the episodes, I had read the scripts already, right? And now I get to see kind of the final product as it was meant to be seen for the whole audience, which is fun. So I'm like learning new things about the show and about what's going on in the current story at the same pace as everybody else.
Yeah, you're on the edge of your seat, not reading it, but actually watching it. And then when the commercials come, it's like, no!
Exactly, why? Yeah. It was so unfair because, like, before I could just read the whole script through and scream like a little girl at the end, but now I have to, like, wait through commercials and it's so aggravating.
What was, you obviously were in Riverdale, and we talked about the Fosters and Amityville Terror, but way long ago, you started a career in sixth grade in Washington.
Yeah,
was
yeah,
your
yeah.
first play? What town? You said a small town in Washington. What small?
Yeah,
town?
Yeah. I'm from Tumwater.
Okay, how small is small?
I think the population is it's like less than 10,000 people.
Okay,
but I think somebody's gonna fact check me. I'm gonna be totally wrong about that.
It's grown since he's left, probably.
Yeah, yeah. It's but like I come from like the Olympia Tumwater area.
Yeah.
I often I started with in Mrs. Dolan's sixth grade class.
Shout out
to Deborah Dolan. I did a Midsummer Night's Dream.
Mm-hmm.
I played
Shakespeare.
Yeah, for my first outing as an actor. Did Shakespeare, and I played Lysander.
Nice. What drew you to that, wanting to be in the play?
You know, I'm not really sure why I wanted to do it. I just knew that I did. I think it was because my older brother was in the same class 2 years prior, and he did the play. And Ms. Dolan, she does the same play with her class every year.
Okay.
And so I saw him do it when I was young. And so then when I got into that class and the play was coming up, I just kind of always knew that I was going to do it. And I did, and I had so much fun that I just kept doing it through middle school, high school. I just kind of auditioned for the school plays and the school musicals and was always just a part of theater.
Were you the same character as your brother, a different character?
I was a different character. I don't remember who my character played, who my brother played.
Yeah.
But no, he was not. He didn't keep up with acting after that.
Awesome, awesome. Now, did you just continue in acting after that? Some people say, I got the bug. I had the bug. Was that you?
You know, it wasn't. I wasn't sure what I wanted to do as a career. Pretty much my entire life, I didn't really know. I had different ideas growing up, but there was nothing like solid that I was like, I really want to do this, you know? I loved acting and I loved performing, but it to me was always just a hobby. And it wasn't until I was coming up on my high school graduation that I thought, I met my agent, my manager down here in LA, and it occurred to me, I was like, I feel like if I wanted to, I could do this and like and make a career. And I just thought that if I could, then I owed it to myself to try it, you know? Hmm. And so, like 4 months after graduating high school, I moved down to L.A.
What did your parents think about that, moving from a small town to L.A. so young?
They were scared. but they knew that it was something that I had to do.
You know? Feel like that's the response that a lot of us say when we talk about this, maybe like 5 years down the line, of like, but they knew that it was the right thing, but they were scared. And then you go back to the moment and they're like, I don't know about this.
Yeah.
I'm really questioning this.
Yeah, I'm sure they had some trepidations like for me. I'm sure that they were like, yeah, maybe he'll have a plan B, I'm sure, if it doesn't work out.
We'll let him explore this possibility.
Right, exactly. But, I mean, I'm really lucky to have very supportive parents. And I think my parents knew that it was something that I was capable of doing, of kind of being on my own at a young age. And so while it's scary, especially because, you know, it was a much larger town that I'd never really been to before, I'm sure that they were terrified for me and obviously sad to see me leave. I remember like driving away because I drove down the coast from Washington to LA. And I remember like the last time I saw my mother, before I left, was I had packed up all my stuff in my car and was driving away from her house. And she was just like crying and waving. I was like, oh God, even just talking about it it's an emotional thing. So, you know, they were sad and scared for me, but they knew that I could take care of myself, and so they were really proud of me.
Now that's a 17-hour drive.
Yeah, about 16 or 17. Yeah.
How many 18-year-olds can do that? Of literally pack up the car and move on their own?
Yeah, I don't know. I just felt like it was. I knew that if I wanted to act, I needed to be here.
Yeah.
Right. And I guess for me, I never really considered an alternative. I know I have younger friends here in Los Angeles that have like moved back home or have thought about moving back home, and it's always struck me as kind of interesting because when I moved here, it was like just with a knowledge that this is where I'd be, right? Yeah. And the idea of leaving never really occurred to me. I remember saying that like it doesn't matter how hard things get, like I will live out of my car if I have to be here and to do this. So yeah, I mean, it was a tough thing. I just packed up my entire life in the back of my car, and I called my best friend, Alex. I was like, hey man, so I'm moving down to LA.
Tell me you called him before you left.
I called him before I left. Yeah, I was like, hey man, I'm on the road. Yeah, hey, I'm on the road, not coming back. No, I called him and I was like, hey man, I'm moving to LA and I'm gonna make the trip down the coast and I want you to come. Like I just want you to make the drive with me and then, you know, I'll fly you back up afterwards when we get there. So he like took a day to think about it and he was like, how many chances am I gonna get to go on a road trip down the coast with my best friend? And so he hops in the car with me. We take a 2-day drive down here. And honestly, it's one of just my favorite memories. It's just like cruising with him and staying in a hotel halfway through. And it was just a really fun time, you know, grabbing dinner in the town that we stopped in. And it was just really fun. It was just like one of those really good memories that when he flew back after we got there, he flew back to Washington. It was just one of those memories that I like held on to and have really cherished since.
What range of emotions were going through your head as you're making this move? That's a huge career move. Obviously, you graduated, most people are maybe going to college where you know other people are not that far away, and you're literally driving 17 hours to the second largest city in the country to pursue a career with no guarantees. What range of emotions are going through your mind at that point?
Like the broadest spectrum that you could think of. It's terrifying. You know, it was one of the scariest things I'd ever done because it was just this monumental shift in the life that I knew, right? I was born and raised in, you know, Olympia, Tumwater, had never lived anywhere else. I visited other cities, but for like a week at a time. And here I was just completely upending my life and causing this just giant shift and change in everything that I knew. So, it was really scary but exciting and really sad because I was the kind of guy that I'm very much like a home body, I guess you could say. Like growing up in my town, I loved it there. You know, I remember being in school and there'd be people who were like, I can't wait to get out of here and never look back. But I was never one of those people. Like I loved where I lived and I honestly didn't want to live anywhere else. I just knew that I would
this
have
is where
to.
You have to be.
Yeah, exactly. And so it was sad for me to leave and to leave behind friends that I'd known my entire life and in my family and to show up in a city where I knew nobody. But I felt confident that I could do it, you know.
So you get here,
I would do what it took.
So you get here, your friend flies back. Yeah. That probably hit too, because you're fully alone.
Yeah, we were crying at the airport. Like, I dropped him off. We just hugged for a long time and we were both crying. And then he left and I was like, yeah, I was just by myself.
Did you know anyone?
I knew my agent and my manager, and thankfully my manager set me up with a place to stay for a couple weeks. And it gave me time to like find a job and find a place to live, which was really useful.
What was the job? What do you got?
No,
what do you got?
I don't wanna...
No, come on. Share it. We all have our fun jobs. Right, I worked in a factory for 3 summers.
I worked at Abercrombie and Fitch as a store. Like, they called them models back then,
uh-huh.
Like the people who walked around the store. Yeah. Every time I tell somebody that, they're like, of course you did. They're like, you didn't even need to tell me that. Somehow I already knew that you worked at Abercrombie and Fitch.
Do you see that, you know, you walk by in the mall and you walk by and every time you're like,
yep,
that was me.
I get flashbacks every time. I smell the cologne that they spray in there and I'm like, it just takes me right back.
but that probably maybe, you know, working those type of jobs, they offer motivation to get out of those type of jobs too.
Yeah, definitely. I think working retail is an interesting experience, you
mm-hmm.
know? I think when you have a goal in mind for your life and for where you want to be, being dissatisfied, I think, is the greatest motivator, you know,
yeah.
for that. Not to say anything bad about Abercrombie and Fitch.
No.
Wonderful.
But it wasn't your passion.
Right, exactly. It wasn't what I wanted to be doing with my time, you know.
How long did you work there? Because I know it was about 2 years from the time you moved to LA to the time you... We're on Riverdale.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It was, I want to say it was closer to probably like a year to a year and a half because we filmed and then the show like premiered later. But I worked there, I think, for, I want to say like 8 months.
Wow.
6 to 8 months. And I kind of, I just saved. I had some savings mm-hmm. before I moved down here. And I stopped working there after I booked a print job,
mm-hmm.
and I stopped working there and kind of floated on savings for a little while, and then
was that 8 months? You said you're saving. Is that the hustle months? You look back and say that was the grind.
Yeah, exactly. That was me doing what I had to do to live. You know, and because I lived far from, because I worked at the one at Universal
mm-hmm.
Studios, the
nice.
Abercrombie Fitch
yeah.
store there, and so it was like a 35-minute drive. Both ways. So I would spend like over an hour on the road every night, and that was rough.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of, yeah, those were the grind months, you know. And I feel lucky because my story is not nearly as trying as a lot of, because I have a lot of actor friends,
yeah.
and some people, I mean, people work so hard to pursue
years
their dreams. Yeah, years. And it's honestly inspiring to me, and I feel so lucky to have people in my life that know what it's like to really struggle and pursue this dream despite all odds, you know. And I just feel really lucky that I've been able to do the work that I've done and support myself.
When you landed the role, you know, the print job, and then started getting other ones, you know, with mm-hmm. the Fosters, with Amityville Terror, and
yeah.
then finally, obviously, with Riverdale, which is a full season, you're doing your job.
Yeah.
What was that like for you?
It was interesting. You know, there's a lot of moments, a lot of peaks and valleys.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say, you know, like there's highs and lows in confidence and your belief in yourself, other people's belief in you,
mm-hmm.
and it's you have to take the good with the bad. You know, I started. I came down here, you know, I was working a couple print jobs, like I said, and
mm-hmm.
I was auditioning for, you know, student films. I did the thing that actors
yeah.
do, you know. I came down, I I worked on a lot of student films, met some passionate people, you know, worked on Amityville, which was like the first feature, you know, like an ultra low budget film, and just kind of worked my way up. You know, I did these things that like nobody will see. Just it's the thing that actors do.
Yeah,
you know?
It's the thing that people who watch these actors on the screen maybe think, oh, well, they automatically got these parts,
right?
And no, there's so much work.
Yeah, exactly. Like years go into every overnight success.
Yes,
right. And so yeah, so I and the thing is like I was doing what I was passionate about. You know, even though I wasn't on these like glamorous sets with full catering and like my own trailer. I got to show up and sit in front of a camera and, you know, try not to look like an idiot, which is what I love doing. And so I worked, I worked my way up and just, I caught a lucky break with, you know, with the Fosters and with Amityville, with Riverdale. And every time it's just an amazing experience. I felt just as lucky booking Riverdale as I did booking like my first student film, you know.
Just because it is someone who believes in you, or it's you know, a realization that you've achieved success?
Yeah, it's definitely in affirmation, you know. In a lot of acting classes that I've been a part of, they preach that like you can't define yourself as an actor by whether or not you work. Like you have to own the fact that you're an actor,
yes.
And you can't wait for a job booking to prove to yourself that you're an actor. If you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like you can't be like, oh, I booked this job, that makes me a real actor. Like you have to be a real actor before the affirmation comes. But that being said, like it is when you get that job or you get that promotion in your work that like it does feel like somebody believes in you and it does feel like, all right, I'm not crazy. Like this might actually work for me.
Sorry, keep going.
Oh yeah, I was just gonna say I felt in both scenarios, like the smallest budget short film or the highest budget television or film production, they're both equal to me in my mind because they're both just these opportunities to explore this thing that I'm passionate about. Yeah.
And I feel like that's not even, you know, just for actors, that's for anyone. You could say, you know, being able to believe for yourself. And even when someone asks you, what are you here in LA? So many people ask you that question, whether you're an actor, whether you're a host, whether you're trying to be an athlete or a producer or whatever.
Or a musician or anything.
Yeah. You have to be able to know to yourself, this is what I am.
Yeah. Yeah. And it took me a long time to say that. I think that's a stigma that, it's hard for some people to get over, especially as entertainers. Like, it took me a while to be able to say that, you know, I'm an actor, right? I think just because there's a stigma around, you know, LA actor, you know. But yeah, I feel like once you start really owning that and being able to say, like, yeah, I'm an actor, and you just have to come, then you have to, you know, battle with the follow up questions, like, oh, what have you been in? What have I seen you in? And you're like, I don't know if you make a habit of watching student films, but but yeah, like once you own that, it's an empowering thing.
When you know you're on Riverdale for the season, that do you take time while you're doing that to be able to enjoy that and know that you've gotten that far and this is where you are and this is the sets that you're on and the trailers and like you're saying, actually have things worth of the budget.
Yeah. I think for me particularly, it's I have always struggled to celebrate myself, you know, and to celebrate my own successes. That's something that, again, like acting teachers have constantly told me that, like, you need to learn to be proud of your own achievements. And I think it just comes from a mindset of, like, I love what I do and I'm never satisfied.
Yeah.
You know, I always want to be doing more. But yeah, like, there were moments of reveling in this feeling of, I wouldn't quite call it success, but just this feeling of progress, you know, of getting to see this final result of something that me and hundreds of people have put so much work into and so much time and passion. You know, I remember the first trailer dropping for Riverdale and just like, I don't know, I was speechless.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's definitely, there are definitely moments where you feel it, you know, you feel it deep within you, this feeling of pride in what you have been able to do.
How do you balance that as a young actor or for anyone in any field of achieving that success but knowing that there's so much more to do? Is there a balance of appreciating where you are but also knowing that there's so much work left to do? And what is that?
Yeah, there's definitely a balance, and I'll let you know when I found it. Like, it is. It's hard. Like I said, it's – I think for some people – it's hard to celebrate and be proud of your own achievements when you know there's so much left to do. And for some people, like, it's easy to get stagnant in what you've done.
Yeah.
You know, there's a balance that comes with there is a balance of being proud while also not being content, you know, and constantly chasing that goal and keeping to the grind and making sure that you're doing the work every day that you need to do to further your progress, right?
Has that been more of a realization even, you know, after Riverdale?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I came off of Riverdale really happy with the work that I put in and just hungry for more, you know, wanting to keep the ball rolling and wanting to continue on doing this thing that I'm passionate about. And it was definitely like, I definitely started to realize that there's always something you can be doing, you know, and I couldn't allow this lovely, lovely thing that I got to be a part of make me comfortable, you know.
You can enjoy it, but you can't, you know, always, you know, use that as an out, use it as a fallback.
Yeah, exactly. I think you have to constantly work as if you've done nothing.
I love that.
Like, I think you have to constantly work as if it's still your first day, you know, and just be just as passionate and be just as eager.
What is the hardest thing for people who you don't know about acting and know kind of like the whole grind that it takes? What is the one thing you wish people knew about the grind and what actors go through to be able to reach their roles?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was just having this conversation last night with a friend of mine. I think something that can be kind of not, I don't want to say frustrating, but something that people don't always understand who don't experience this for themselves every day is that that one job is not a career make, you know? Like, people see you in one like commercial on the internet and they're like, you've made it. You're done. you're rolling in cash. You're famous now. Like, yeah. That's it, right?
Life's going to be easy.
Right, exactly. And that's just not how it works. Like, you can do one great thing and then not work for 10 years, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, you are constantly unsure, you know? And even that, like, even for me, coming off of Riverdale, which is and continues to be or was and continues to be an amazing experience. Mm-hmm. It's still like, I'm still not done.
Yeah.
You know? And I feel like a lot of people, that's kind of the viewpoint they adopt, which I get. Like, you see somebody on TV and you're like, oh, they've made it. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's just not always the case. You just constantly, you're always working. You're always trying to figure out where your next piece of work and where your next job is going to come from.
Coming off that, and before we get to some fan questions, just I'm wanting to know, what would you consider to be your definition of success?
I think my personal definition of success is, it might sound a little trite or cliche, but I think my personal definition of success is just being able to do work that I am able to look back on and be proud of. Mm-hmm. You know, even... like, obviously, I want to be able to support myself financially, but just being able to do work that I feel, like, in my heart was good and meaningful, something that I can really be proud of, that is what's important to me. I don't care what it is. I don't care if it's, again, like, a no-budget student film, short film, or, you know, like a Steven Spielberg movie.
Yeah.
As long as it's work that I enjoy and can be proud of, and work that makes other people proud, that's what success is to me.
And that's awesome. It's a great attitude to have, and I love, again, asking people that question, because it's never the answer for people of like, oh, achieving this much money or getting to this level. It, you know, really boils down to that impact that you're having on other people through the work that you're doing,
right,
or
exactly.
The family.
Yeah, exactly.
Fantastic. Well, that wraps up the series portion. We have a lot of fan questions. If you're willing to take a few.
Yeah, I love fan questions.
Excellent. Now, I know you've been following along on this current season, so you know about the Black Hood. And
yes.
I got to know, do you know who the Black Hood is, or do you think you know who the Black Hood is?
Oh, I know.
You know 100%.
100%. It's Hot Dog. Archie's dog. It was him the whole time, you guys. He's orchestrated this whole thing.
Is that something that is really, you know, now that you're kind of more of a fan, that you're wanting to know, or do you know?
I don't know at all.
Okay.
I'm dying to know.
Who's your theory?
That's the thing. I got asked this in Poland a lot too, right? I have no clue. Like the mystery has trumped me better than even the mystery in the first season did. And I just have no idea who it is. Like I keep thinking about all the characters on the show and who it could be. I've appreciated the theories that it's Hal Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like where I've seen some of the evidence. I like where I see people's heads going in that direction.
You're Team Hal.
Yeah, I feel like for now I'm kind of Team Hal. Like I said, I need to catch up, so maybe there's some evidence that I haven't seen. But the mystery of this season is so enticing to me that I am dying to figure out who it is.
Excellent.
And I have no idea. I wish I could. I wish I could tell you guys more. I really do.
Well, there's been the talk of the spinoff series with Sabrina
coming
to Netflix.
Yeah, it just got picked up, right, for two seasons, I think.
Yeah, and so we don't know much about that besides, you know, Sabrina's a little maybe dark magic.
Yeah.
And that could maybe see them reaching back into Jason Blossom. What are your thoughts on that? Would you like to be able to come back to life?
The group of people that work on these shows, and Roberto, like the lead writer behind this whole thing, the mastermind behind this whole thing, they're amazing. And I would nary turn down an opportunity to work with them again. And yeah,
are you hopeful?
Am I hopeful? You know, I think it'd be an interesting take, an interesting storyline. And I guess all I can really say about it is that when it comes to Riverdale and the town of Riverdale, that universe, even if you may know where the bodies are buried, that doesn't always necessarily mean they'll stay buried.
I like that. Now, we got maybe one last question here.
Yeah.
Your sister, Cheryl, certainly has transitioned this season, kind of going. I was talking with someone earlier. It's like she's on the ledge, and you don't know which way she's gonna fall.
Yeah.
Which way would you like to see her fall? Because she's kind of gone more evil. Would you like to see her go full blown evil?
You know, it's interesting. I've said it before. I think Cheryl was a powerhouse in the first season, and now she's even more of just this amazing bombshell. Honestly, I'd like to see how twisted she can get. I'd like to see how dark they can take that character and continue to make her like believable and relatable. And they can do it. The writers on the show are capable of anything. And Madeleine is a very talented actress. I think she can handle it. So
excellent. Yeah. Well, I'm sure a lot of people were very interested to see what your thoughts have been on this past season. And obviously, looking ahead, we'd love to see you back in Sabrina. You know, that's certainly something that is up in the air, and you never know what that could bring.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us, and especially opening up, you know, about kind of the struggles that any actor faces, and especially those Abercrombie and Fitch days that a lot of people, you know, we'll give a free plug to A&F.
Yeah.
But I appreciate that. I know it's not always easy, and I think it's something that is encouraging.
Yeah. It's not easy, but it is so worth it in the end, you know, especially getting to see the results of your work and meet people whose work, who you've affected through your own struggles, it makes it all worth it, you know.
Absolutely. Hope we've had an impact and affected people on the show, maybe give you just a different view of Trevor's life, certainly offer some motivation, some encouragement, some inspiration. That's what we love to try to do on the show. Again, we are live Mondays at 4:10 here on the Popcorn Talk Network. We're on iTunes. We're on YouTube. Go tell your friends, like, comment, rate, give us 5 stars. If you would like to follow Trevor after the show, follow him on Twitter, on Instagram, at Trevor_Stein. You have such a big following, a lot of loyal fans.
Yeah, I really do. I'm really lucky.
Yeah. So if you'd like to follow me at TheOnlyMC. Guys, thank you so much again. The season of giving, we're in the Christmas season. First off, Merry Christmas. But again, that challenge, go be generous. Go do something kind for someone else today. We'll see you next time.
For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.